Okay. Scavenger hunt through the Torah today, God willing. We're 30 days before, less than 30 days before Pesach. And not to make anybody nervous, not to make anybody nervous at all. The Gemara in a bunch of places says the following line. It says, I'm going to start, by the way, we usually don't do halacha. We haven't done a halacha once. I'm going to start halachic because I want to make a non-halachic point. Sholim v'darshim behilchas chag lamed yom. You're supposed to begin to ask and investigate and look into the holiday 30 days before the holiday. You start 30 days before, that's when you begin to ask all the questions. Sholim v'darshim behilchas Pesach kodem l'chag shloshim yom. You ask things 30 days before Pesach. And that's, by the way, that's Purim. That falls out, really. Mamish Purim is 30 days before Pesach. So in the middle, while you're dropping off Shalach Manas and you had nothing else to do on Purim, you're supposed to stop and just begin to ask your Pesach questions. The problem with that is there's a Medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni. The Medrash tells us on the Parsha of Vayakel, right? There's a Parsha of Vayakel coming up. And Vayakel is where Moshe, Vayakel means Moshe gathered. Moshe gathered everyone together. So how many times do you think Moshe gathered everyone together? So the Medrash says as follows. Rabotenu Bale Agada Omrim, our masters of the Agada, who know the Torah inside out, says, Mitchilat HaTorah Va'ad Sofa, from the beginning of the Torah until the end, Ein Ba Parsha, there is no Parsha where it says at the beginning that Moshe gathered everyone together, except for this one. So why were they gathered together? Because they were gathered together right now to tell you that they used to gather together every Shabbos to go over things related to that day. So too, Moshe instituted Shiud Dorshim B'inyano Shel Yom. You're supposed to learn on that holiday, on that day, when they come up. So Moshe instituted that, let's say Pesach comes up, you're supposed to learn Pesach. If you look at the Art Scroll Siddurim, they actually have a section of Mishnayos that relate to that holiday, so when you're in the holiday, you can learn more about the holiday. The problem is, I thought we're supposed to start 30 days before. Do we start 30 days before, or do we start on the holiday? So I don't think they contradict each other. I think possibility number one is the language about the 30 days is you begin to ask questions. In-depth learning, and as far as appreciating and getting an awareness, maybe that only starts on the holiday itself. But the questions you need answered, you got to start earlier. You got to start way before to get answers to those questions, right? You got to start ahead of time. That could be one possibility. I think there's something else, though. And this is the basis for what I'm going to say this morning. Again, one teaching says that we're supposed to start asking about the holidays 30 days before. One teaching says we start on the holiday. So you could say the difference is asking questions of how to practice. That starts 30 days before. Appreciation study, that starts on the day itself. But maybe there's another distinction between the two. 30 days before is a time to develop the preparation that we need as we go into Pesach itself. The 30 days before are to get us into the mindset, the mind frame, that now turns our mind over from holiday A into holiday B. That takes us out of a Purim mindset into a Pesach mindset. It's this bridge between the two. The 30 days are the segue from Purim over to Pesach. And it's incredible that there is this very strong link. There is this very strong link between Purim and Pesach. For example, the Gemara in Tanit, when discussing the famous line that I'm sure you've heard of, Mi shenichna sadar marbim besimcha, when Adar enters, you increase the joy. So the Gemara in Tanit 29b, which has that line, so Rashi on the spot says, on Misha Nichnas Adar Marim Besimcha. You know the opposite? When the month of Av enters, Mematim Besimcha. When the month of Av enters, you lessen the joy. So Rashi there says, you increase the joy. You increase the joy in Adar and continue into Nisan on Pesach. So already Rashi's telling you, whatever started on Purim, some idea there is going to continue on to Pesach. So the question we're focusing on today is, what is that link? What is that link between Purim and Pesach? What is that segue between the two? What are we supposed to focus on in common? That Rashi's already telling us there's a connection. This idea of learning 30 days before Pesach. What's 30 days before Pesach? It's Purim. There's something we're being told that we must stop in the middle of Purim, so to speak, to begin to think about Pesach. You know what halacha everybody thinks about before Pesach, by the way, on Purim, is how I'm going to get rid of all this junk by Pesach. Right? That's what we actually think about. So there is this link, this relationship that's being established between Purim and Pesach, between the two. And the question is really, what is this link? Because when you think about it, they're exactly the opposite. They're exactly the opposite. Number one, Purim is totally a product of our being in Galut, of us being in exile. It took place in a foreign land, right, in Persia. Also, the word Purim is not even a Hebrew word. The word Purim is a foreign language word, right? That's the word Purim. Three, the word Megillah, right? It's so foreign, the word Purim, that the Megillah has to keep translating it every time it comes up, right? The Megillah said, Hipil Pur Hu Agoral. They want to give you a translation. Another one, the Gemara Megillah points out that on Purim, there's no Hallel. Pesach has Hallel. What I'm trying to show you is that there's a strong link between Purim and Pesach. When you look at the identity of the days, they could not be more distant from one another. They so have nothing to do with each other. Purim is this day where the words we use are foreign language words. Pesach is a celebration, a totally different nature. It's leaving the Galus. Purim is being in Galus. They're totally opposite. Another distinction between the two. Pesach celebrates us leaving control of a human king. Purim, we're still under the domain of a human king, Achashverosh. We say Hallel all of Pesach, as I pointed out. On Purim, we don't say Hallel at all. The name of Pesach reflects that which Hashem did for us. The name of Purim doesn't reflect that. It reflects something that happened. Yeah, Hashem was behind the scenes. So we're saying that 30 days before Pesach, you start talking about Pesach, which is Purim. And we said there's this link that even Rashi in the Gemara said that Misha Nichnas Adar spills over into Pesach. But when you look at the two holidays, you cannot get two more opposite holidays. You cannot even conceive of two more opposite holidays. So what does it mean that there is this link between the two? I'll give you another source that pulls the two even tighter together. You know, sometimes you have two Adars in a year. Sometimes you have a leap year and you have two Adars. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara as when do you then celebrate Purim? Do you celebrate in Adar Rishon or do you celebrate in Adar Sheni? When do you celebrate Purim? First Adar or second Adar? We celebrate it in the second Adar. Gemara asks a great question. We have a rule. Ein ma'avirin al mitzvos. You don't pass over a mitzvah. For example, if you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah in front of you, you don't pass it and say, I'll get to it later. Or let someone else do it. If a mitzvah is right in front of you, you do it right then. Yes?
This is something that's been driving me crazy. I keep forgetting to ask you. When Kiddush, whatever, are you supposed to drink or can you pass it first? This is an ongoing issue in my family.
Some want to say that that's Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos. You don't pass over the mitzvahs. But I don't think that's Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos. The head of the household is trying to... First of all, the head of the household should always take the sip first because they just made the bracha. But they're designating this challah or this bread to go down to the farthest person. That's not passing over the mitzvah. It ain't for you yet. It's for that person. Okay. Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos is when something's for you and you decide, I'm relinquishing. This is not for you yet. No one gave it to you. I gave it to you to pass. I gave it to you to get it to that person's plate. So I think it's not equivalent. But we have this concept of Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos. That's the case. Why did I stick the Megillah and the Purim in the second Adar? It should be in the first Adar. Don't we believe in Ein Ma'avir and Al HaMitzvos? So you know what the answer the Gemara comes up with? It says, "Cause somchin geula legeula." We want to keep our redemptions together. What redemptions? The redemption of Purim with the redemption of Pesach. We want to keep the two together. So you see again, even though when you look at the holidays, their identities could not be further apart, the Gemara is trying very hard to link the two together and make this connection between these two holidays. And let me go now the other side one more time and to show you how they're so different and incredibly different. We make a Shechianu at night, and then we make another Shechianu during the day on Megillah reading. If you listened in Shul, you heard a Shechianu at night, and then you heard a Shechianu during the day. So why do we make two Shechianus? When you have a new mitzvah, you're supposed to make the Shechianu once, right? So says the Magid Mishnah on the Rambam, commenting on the Rambam. It says as follows. Rambam says it's a mitzvah to read the Megillah, mitzvah to read it at night and at day. All night is kosher for the night Megillah, all day is kosher for the day Megillah. Okay? And he says as follows. Right? Kol mitzvah shekosher b'yom. Any mitzvah that was kosher at night is kosher also at day. Fine. And then he adds the following. As far as the bracha. He says, you make the repetition of the Shechianu during the day. But here he goes. Iker hakriya hu b'yom. But no. That the main reading of the Megillah is the daytime one, not the nighttime one. So why are you making a Shechianu at night? Now I understand why I make it during the day. Why at night? So some want to say the difference is because the one at night is celebrating over the holiday as a whole, and the one during the day is for the real mitzvah of reading the Megillah. That's one answer. Others want to say there's two separate requirements. One mitzvah at night, one mitzvah in the day, and they have nothing to do with each other. They're two separate mitzvahs. But the Magen Mishnah says, when it comes to Purim, the Iker reading of the Megillah is during the day. If I were to stop and ask you, when is the major celebration of Pesach? The night or the day? Clearly the night. Clearly the Seder. There's no one who's even... I'm not going to give you anybody who argues. There's nobody who argues. The clear mitzvah of Pesach is the Seder. So what does that show you? Again, Purim and Pesach could not be farther apart from each other in their concept and in their identity. And for some odd reason, the Gemara, so many other sources are trying hard to put the Purim next to the Pesach. If there's some commonality, there's some link between the two, when I cannot find, maybe Tisha B'Av, I cannot find a more contrasting holiday, if we were to pick one on the Jewish calendar, than Purim and Pesach. So what in fact is there? What in fact is their connection? That's the basic question we're operating with today. How are they linked when Chazal is trying to link them, when in concept and identity, they're totally removed from each other? So I'd like to share with you a couple approaches. This is a beautiful insight from Rav Soloveitchik on the Siddur, which I think we could apply to us as far as Purim and Pesach. Rav Soloveitchik wonders why after Shema, if you notice after the Shema in the nighttime, if you ever look at a Mariv in the nighttime, right, it's Emet ve'emuna. That's the paragraph right after the Shema, right? Truth and faith. If you look at the prayer of Emet right after the Shema in the morning, it's Emet ve'yatziv. No emuna. Rav Soloveitchik says, why did the prayer change? Keep the prayer uniform. Just like the Shema is uniform, keep the prayer uniform. And he quotes the Pasuk. Ulahagid baboker chastecha, to tell your chesed in the morning, ula emunatcha balaylot, and your emuna at night. Your chesed is told in the morning, and your emuna is told at night. So the daytime paragraph focuses more on chesed. The nighttime paragraph focuses more on emuna. Why? Why is night emuna day chesed? Says Rav Soloveitchik, nighttime is dark. Nighttime is scary. Nighttime is a time to wonder what is going to be. You can't see outside. We have lights, but you essentially can't see. It's unknown. And you need to trust that everything is going to be okay. That when I go to sleep at night, I'm going to wake up in the morning. That's emuna. It's a celebration of something that hasn't happened yet in your life, and you're waiting for it to happen. That's what emuna is. That's why emet ve'emuna is associated with the Maariv. Ulahagid baboker chastecha. To speak of chesed in the morning, that's when you feel you're being taken care of. The daytime, when everything is great, everything is good, you go outside, the sun is shining, everything makes sense, that's chesed. Chesed is something you feel the benefits of right away. Generally, chesed, you feel the benefits of right away. It's that experience of chesed, it's that gratitude of chesed that you feel at that moment. That's ulah. Your chair, come here. Right here, right here. We have ulahagi baboker chastecha, ula emunatcha balaylo. That's the difference. Why the nighttime is a nighttime of emuna, and the daytime is a time of chesed. It's a time of chesed. That's what Rav Soloveitchik says on the Siddur. It's a beautiful thought on the Siddur.
And it's also easier to do chesed during the day.
Oh, excellent. Chesed is just an easier function during the day. You know where people are. You could see them. They could see who's coming. You can make the phone calls that need to be made. The night is that unknown. It relies, it gives it up to God. That's the emuna of the nighttime. Pesach is a function of the nighttime. And that's why the main mitzvah is the Seder, which is the nighttime. Why? Pesach is called Matzah Dimehim Nusa. It's called the Matzah of Faith. It's the time of Emuna. The Jews were leaving Egypt. Did they know where they were going? They had no clue where they were going. They didn't know where this would end up. They didn't understand this at all in any way. They don't know what it means yet to go to Har Sinai. They don't know what it means to eventually enter into the land of Israel and to be their own people. They couldn't even relate to it. You talk about the people who left after the Holocaust and begin to found the state of Israel. They say they couldn't even, you couldn't even wrap your mind around the concept. You told someone who was in, you know, God forbid, in Auschwitz that this was going to happen in 5 years from now. They think you're nuts. They think you're a dreamer. You're crazy, right? Hayinu kecholmim. We were like dreamers. That's the idea. That you couldn't even fathom it. That's what emunah is. Emunah is you have to believe that something is coming. That's why Pesach, the mitzvah of Pesach, manifests itself in the nighttime. Purim, the primary mitzvah, is the reading during the daytime. The mitzvah during the daytime. Purim is a celebration of something we felt right away. We were about to be killed, and we were saved. The sensation, the chesed that happened to us was instantaneous. It wasn't a delayed gratification of down the line we're getting somewhere. That's Pesach. Purim is immediate, and that's chesed. The chesed of experiencing right now. And therefore, the main expression of Purim is during the day. Ikar kriyasa zuhi ayom, right? As the Magid Mishnah said, the main experience of Purim is during the day. And that's the chesed we do, is during the day, dropping off the shalach manas, the matanas levyonim, get the meal in while it's still day, to be with friends, to be with family, all during the day. Pesach manifests itself primarily at night. Emunaska balelos, emunaska, that emuna at night. So then what's the link between Purim and Pesach? They're two sides of a similar coin. The coin is, ulahagid baboker chastecha, is one component, emunaska balelos, and the faith of the night. It's the chesed of the morning and the faith of the night. And I think that's the link that's being made between the two, between Purim and Pesach. And therefore you'll see that Purim is very much rooted in chesed. We talked about this last week when we talked about Yom Kippur and Purim, how there's that element of Bein Adam L'Chavero on Purim very prominently, because it's very much about chesed, experiencing chesed. Pesach is very much about emunah, an expression of faith, an expression of bringing out what we believe, talking about it at the Seder. Talking about it. Now, no Jewish experience is removed from chesed. You're at the same time saying, whoever's hungry, come and eat. You're opening your doors. But it's primarily about emunah. Purim was about chesed. Pesach was about emunah. And I think that is one connection between the two. Another connection, I think, between Pesach and Purim and Pesach. You could look at it that Purim paves the way for Pesach. What does that mean? Haman understood the world as being as a random world. Everything is chance. That's a mulik. Asher karcha b'derech, the chaos theory of life, right? You know how life works? You take a bag full of nails, you shake it up, and everything has been moved around and it's no longer in the same place. That's life. Everything is chaos. Things could happen randomly. Why does the world come to be like a perfect artwork? Eventually you try over and over and over, eventually you'll get something. The monkeys keep typing on the typewriter, eventually Shakespeare's sonnet will come up. It may take billions of years, eventually. It's the chaos theory. There's merit to the chaos theory. I don't laugh about the chaos theory, but we don't believe in the chaos theory. But that's the concept. That's a mulek. That's a sher karcha baderech. Life is all happenstance. There are no realities that happen. Everything is just an accident in life. That's a mulek. That's Purim. Purim was us trying to grapple with the fact that nothing is random. There are no lots. There are no hipil pur hua purim. What I mean by lots, I mean lottery. There are no lotteries. It's not random. The Yad Hashem is there, right? The Grager is the hand of God underneath the whole story, controlling the whole picture. What event proves that we got Purim right? See, we could say we were wrong. Purim, we just ended up on the right side of the coin. The way the sequence of the story worked out, amazing as it was, once in a while, the story works out. Maybe that's what happened with Purim. What proves that that is not the case with Purim? You know what proves that that was not the case with Purim? Pesach proves that that's not the case with Purim. The open-handed miracles of Pesach forever embedded the message in the hearts and minds of the Jewish people that we will never adopt the chaos theory of life. We will never buy into the chaos theory of life. Everything happens, and everything has a cause, and everything has a primary mover. So Purim segues nicely into Pesach, because Purim asks us to find God in the story, to find God's hand in reality. Comes Pesach, and Pesach is the proof that we got Purim correct, that we figured it out, that we got the story right. It concretizes the message, and it reaffirms, and it proves that that was the message, because Yetzias Mitzrayim was the great revelation. It was the great exodus that everyone participated in and showed us that nothing was by chance. Everything is part of an amazing plan that God told us about from the beginning of time. And Pesach therefore proves Purim. So we're trying again to find the link between Purim and Pesach when they're worlds away from each other. Because Chazal are definitely trying to find the wedge between the two. Number one, I think the first link, as we said before, is they're part of two sides of the same coin. Ula hagid baboker chasdecha, that's Purim. Ula emunascha b'leila, and the emuna of the night, that's Pesach. That's one link. Number two, the second link, is that Pesach proves that we figured out Purim the right way. Pesach proves that we figured out Purim. So, by the way, if you would just analyze these two pshatim, the first pshat, what it was doing, was showing you how they're opposites, but they complement each other. The second pshat was saying how the second one clarifies the first. I'm going to give you a third pshat, which actually says the two are the same. The two have the same themes running throughout. What's that? So, Mishe nichnas Adar marbim besimcha. When Adar enters, we increase the simcha. What's the converse of that? Mishe nichnas Av mematin besimcha. Right? When Av enters, not the father, when Av enters. There's a famous story of Yonasan Eibeshitz when he was a little kid. He was jumping on his bed in his room. And the father said, why are you doing that? He goes, well, Mishe nichnas Av, they're marvin besimcha. So he goes, so then why did you stop all of a sudden? He goes, you walked in. Mishe nichnas Av mematin besimcha. When Av comes in, you lessen the simcha. So Av is the contrast. Av is the opposite of Adar. Why is Av so marred in this bitter state? Why is Tisha B'Av, this function of Av, these 3 weeks that lead into these very dark days? What was one of the great sins of Av that happened then? So we know, yes, of course, there was Chinam, Sinas Chinam, but the earliest tragedy that we know of in history of Tisha B'Av was the Chet HaMeraglim. That's the cause of Tisha B'Av. If you look in the keynotes for Tisha B'Av, right, the famous line, Atem b'chitem b'chia, ani neten l'cha b'china shel doros. You cried then, I'm going to give you something to cry about in the future. When the Jews complained, they went into Israel, God was giving them a gift that he'd been waiting to give the Jewish people. And the Meraglim, the spies, go in and they lashon hara about the land. Now, how did this lashon hara happen, this motzi shemra about the land happen? It was all based on a misperception. They did not see everything. They saw what they wanted to see, right? Hayinu b'einechem kechagavim. We were like in their eyes like grasshoppers. It's one thing to say we are grasshoppers. It's another to say in their eyes we're grasshoppers. You know what that is? That's projection. You're projecting what they think of you. You don't know what they think of you. You have no clue what they think. We do this all the time. We guess what someone else is thinking about us. You don't know what the other person's thinking about us. Certainly you can't judge a nation that you didn't speak to while you were there. You were sneaking in. How do you know how they view you? On the contrary, we know that they were trembling when the Jews came into the land. It wasn't they were like grasshopper, it was the opposite. So a total misperception, a total misunderstanding of everything that had happened, totally ruined everything. And that was the start of Tisha B'Av. Misperceptions, misunderstandings. Look at the great cataclysmic episode that sparked the whole destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, of inviting to the party, this one invited. It was all based on one terrible misconception, misperception. Look at Miriam when she got in trouble with her brother Moshe, right? She judged him. Why? She saw that he was staying away from his wife, and she said, listen, he makes it like he has special conversations with God that no one else has. What's he doing over here? What's he doing? She didn't realize that for whatever reason, God asked Moshe for right now to stay away from his wife. Okay, for whatever reason, and there's tons of discussion on that. She misperceived, and because of that, spoke Lashon Hara. She misperceived and was Motzei Shemra. Look the next time the Jews were exiled from the land, in the time of King Yoshiyahu. What happened with King Yoshiyahu? He didn't let the Egyptians pass through. Paro Niko, the head of the Egyptians, wanted to pass through the land. And they were our allies at the time, against the Assyrian army. They were our allies. And he said no. And the king Yoshiyahu said no. Even though the prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, was telling him, let them through. He said, no, now is the time when we fulfill the prophecy that no sword shall pass through our land, and God will protect us. It was all based on a misperception, not listening to what he was supposed to listen to. And that was the downfall of the empire. He was a good person, he was a tzaddik, but he didn't listen to what he was supposed to listen to. And that was the downfall. We see that by Miriam, we see it by King Yoshiyahu, we see it by the Meraglim, we see it over and over. Misperceptions, misunderstandings. You know, look what Shaul HaMelech did by sparing Agag, Amalek. Total destruction. Why? He made his own judgment call. Well, God can't really mind if I spare this one or if I spare that one. Who are you to make the decision? It's not your call. It's not your decision to make. You have a totally skewed and misperceived way of looking at the circumstances. And that leads to destruction. That is Churban. Purim and Pesach are the exact opposite. And this is what links the two together. Purim is us finally perceiving things the correct way. Mordechai and Esther understanding really what the score is over here. The Jewish people all joining in fasting and prayer, understanding what is happening over here, understanding all the subterfuge that was happening here. It's one of the few times in our story where all the Jews are on the same page. We're all on the same page. We all were getting what was happening here. Look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? What happened? Moshe is taking them with Aaron to a dead end, right? To a dead end. They do say the line, Hamibli ein kfarim b'mitzrayim. Were there no graves in Egypt that we have to die out here? By the way, Rav Sham Shval Hirsch says, it's the first time you see Jews have in their DNA gallows humor, the ability to make fun of their terrible situations. They're about to be killed here, and they say, what, we couldn't be buried over there? It's the first time you see that Jews have that quality to make fun of their circumstances. So over there, what happens? Rashi and Shmo says, once they saw it, they went closer to Moshe. Moshe says, back up towards Egypt a little bit, and they went towards Moshe. They trusted. Listen, we have questions. We're nervous, but if this is what you want for us, this is what you want for us. And Nachshon ben Aminadav steps right into the water and it splits. A natural perspective would say, run for the hills. So water in front of you, get out of the way. That's the way it seems. It's the way King Yoshiahu viewed the world. It seems to me we shouldn't let him through. These are good days when we could trust that no sword will cross the land. It's a misperception. Natural logic would say, spare a few of the Amalek people. I got to get rid of all them. But we don't operate by natural logic. We operate by God's logic. It's a separate methodology. It's a separate system. It's mixing apples and oranges. It's a separate logic. It's, by the way, Yaakov. We always look at Yaakov taking the firstborn from Esav. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says Yaakov didn't take the firstborn. He was given the firstborn. But natural would show us that he's not the firstborn. You're using natural logic to define firstborn. God tells you who the firstborn is and who's the firstborn and who has the right. And God wanted Yaakov to have this birthright. That makes it God's logic. There's the logic of the natural world and there's the logic of God. By the way, Lahavdil Elef Avdolos. People have a problem with this. People have a problem when the logic system of the Torah runs a little different than the logic of the natural world. But we'll do it in any other subject. You can't mix and match the axiomatic principles of physics with the principles you use for simple math. And you can't mix and match simple axiomatic principles of math that you would use for English. The principles contradict themselves. The laws contradict themselves. Because everything has its own system of logic. Kal v'chomer of kal v'chomers, the Torah should have its own system of logic that it operates by. And that's how the Torah functions. And therefore, that's the link between Purim and Pesach. They're the holidays where we finally got it right. Our perceptions, our way of viewing it, understanding that there's a higher order here. There's a higher order at work that defies all possibilities. And it's that perception of Purim and it's that perception of Pesach which allows us to triumph and move through the two. Okay, so we discussed a few links. Yes, go ahead, please.
You mentioned that Av comes before Adar and Nisan. And it seems to me that what you're doing, what we're saying is that the problems created by Av, both a lack of emunah and a lack of chesed, are then resolved by Purim.
Purim and Pesach are the times
Purim,
correct.
Chesed, right?
Correct.
So that's what they have to.
Excellent. Purim has the message where we understand it and what our obligation is to each other. Beautiful. That's the link to Tisha B'Av. Very strong link to Tisha B'Av.
Right.
And Purim. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Right.
Tisha B'Av has the duality. Tisha B'Av has the Sinas Chinam, the basic major source of Sinas Chinam, and it has the lack of Amunah that God's going to take care of us,
yeah,
the Meraglim. Those two come together nicely because that's the Purim. Oh, that's,
yeah,
oh, beautiful. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's a strong one. That's good. Yeah. Great. Great. Okay, excellent. Excellent. So we saw these links between Purim and Pesach. I thought there were three different pshatim. It turns out now the first and the third dovetail quite nicely, one into each other. And then we could definitely loop the second in as well, that it's a realization of that we understood Purim with the proper hashgaf, with the proper perspective, that they are all connected. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, I close this idea. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov has this idea that on Purim, on Pesach, and we have this many sources in Chazal. Pesach is this time of complete renewal. It's this rebirth of the nation. It's reforming ourselves. It's reasserting ourselves. And I think on that simple level as well, that's your Purim and that Pesach. On Purim, we got a new lease on life. Purim, we thought the end was here. And in that last moment, v'nafochu, it all turned around. And in that last moment, when everything turned around, when our lives were spared, that's Pesach as well. Hanukkah was not a physical problem. We were going to live. It just meant without our Torah. But the physical survival element is true to both Purim and is true to Pesach as well. Those great Yeshuas that come to us in our life. And as I say that Mitzrayim, right? Mitzrayim stands for Mitzarim, those confines. That on Pesach we experience what it means to have those personal salvations in our own lives. It's not just something commemorative of thousands of years ago. You waste Pesach when you leave it just something about the past. It's just looking at the past to get clues about what Pesach means to us in 2013 in our current context. And what we're saying today is that you could even look at Purim to get a better understanding what it means to be free on Pesach as well. Okay, we'll stop there for today. Okay.